Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. I'm Mike Rayleigh, and Miss Nelsa Cox is with us this morning.
Good morning.
We've gotten her off the highway for a little while.
I think she loves to drive.
I think she does, too.
I used to love
more than I do now. It's just it's kind of a mess out there.
It's just a means to get from point A to point B when you got to do what you got to do.
And you got to know where you're going, too.
This is true.
Just in case something happens. And Brother Rufus is over there pontificating and analyzing and solving problems as usual. Sir, good morning. Great one.
Well, buenos dias. feet are sane. Good morning, everybody.
Yes, sir. Well, it's a gorgeous day out there. You can tell the humidity is up just a little bit.
It's going to be a great day for the parade.
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten a nice sunshine. I was worried earlier in the week about a little rain, and that rain was earlier. I guess it was overnight.
Well, we do need some rain. It's very
dry. We're in bad shape rain-wise, precipitation-wise. The drought monitor says we're all...
Yeah,
we're all suffering a little bit.
Farm in Julian is bone dry. I was going to try to get a bunch of blackberries in the ground for a new row we're running, and I told Mom, I said, I'm going to have to delay. It's like a brick, so I'm going to put that off till December. But I did get to harvest broccoli.
So. I'm sorry you weren't here last week because Gary Stevenson was with us from Spectrum Weather.
Oh, wow.
And we just that's the second time he's been on, and he he fits in really well with this wild bunch here. But he was he brought some kale that had made, and it had pepper. It was good.
Well,
it was made with beef broth.
Fried.
Beef broth.
And
well, it was in a wok.
It was edible. Yes, it was edible.
Well, okay.
Oh, kale,
then
I said.
Then kale, yeah.
we all ate it up. Now, it was kind of chewy.
I didn't
but
promise
that was just,
to continue
That's
to
just
eat
the
it.
Nature of kale.
See, I like doing bok choy that way, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking about kale and bok choy, they're great pieces to have to our landscape from an ornamental point of view as well as an edible point of view. But I'm noticing Oak Island has a beautification club, and they have about 9 sites they maintain, and one of them is when I come over the bridge. It's this middle kind of triangular island, and they do such a great job. Every Friday, religiously, they're there. And then I also went over to Holden Beach one day, and they do the best job with kale. When you enter and exit onto the bridge or from the island, it's just beautiful. I mean, I don't know if it's red boar or peacock, but it's just or glamour. It's called glamour, so it kind of has a shiny cast to it. But I just highly recommend that whether you're doing it in mass plantings or containers or you know, an entryway to the front of your house or mailbox. I mean, they're drought tolerant, they're tough, they're cold hardy. Just, you know, can take severe weather. They're just gorgeous. That pops of purples or pinks or, you know, in the foliage even. Some of it can be lacy, some of it can be kind of curly, but it's just a great plant to have.
What a great thing to do with kale. Absolutely.
I think we're going to I'm going to make some at some point.
Well,
I really like it, and the pepper flakes were good. I mean, they weren't too hot. They weren't too hot, and they just kind of added a little
spice
something.
To it.
But it had a really good flavor.
Yeah.
One gentleman suggested we use a cup of olive oil.
Yeah. It can have some bitterness
to
it.
That would kind of wash it away, though.
Yeah. Yeah,
he said, help it go down the sink.
Well, it can have some bitterness to it, but, you know, after we've had a few frosts, it really kind of gets a
this
nice...
This was not bitter at all.
Yeah.
I suggested some bacon bits on the top.
Bacon bits. Now we're really getting into something now.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think the nutritional value might be cut back a bit.
Another
point to make sure is very clear and understood by our listeners is there's ornamental kale, and then there's the agricultural or edible kale.
Semi-edible kale.
Well, but if you buy the ornamental kale, that is not for you to eat. We used to put signs out, but that is not for you to eat because I'm sure 100% of it grown, they use growth regulators to stunt the growth so it doesn't stretch and keep that compact, habit to it. So you definitely don't want to eat something that's been chemically treated with a growth regulator. So make sure when you're purchasing, you're doing one for aesthetics and beauty and the other for nutrition and eating.
Yeah, don't get them mixed up.
That's right. That's right.
You'll be very disappointed, bacon bits or not. Now, Nelson, we bought a Japanese maple. I don't remember what kind, but it's a green leafed and a very fine leaf.
Okay, probably.
But this year, it has, we've had it for 4 or 5 years. But this year, it just has spectacular color. Yeah, I love the Japanese maples this time of year.
I thought it was going to be a Siru, and it may be a Siru.
Really stringy.
Yeah.
Type. Something's happening at the farm. I hear the dogs.
The chicken lady's going in to check on them.
All right.
It looks like a dwarf form of the Siru maple. I'll have to.
Nice color, you think? Rufus?
Might be Kyoto.
Yeah. Wow.
Maybe Kyoto or. It looks too compact in between the internodes to be a Siru. I have a Siru at the farm that is stunning. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And these. This is.
It's beautiful.
About
6 feet
tall. It is. It just all of a sudden turned.
Beautiful color.
Yeah, I'm so happy with it.
And it has leaf retention because you have other plants around it versus if it were out in the open with the cold we've already had, they would have defoliated.
Well, it's right. It's very near the fragrant osmanthus. It's right behind. It's right in front of it. So this protection from the north winds.
J.C. Ralston was just enamored by Japanese maples, and I remember him saying that one of his goals was no matter where you were standing on the grounds of the arboretum, that in any turn you would be able to eye or view or see a Japanese maple. So that's always stuck with me, and so I'm starting to incorporate more, although I have some great prizes. I mean, I probably have maybe 20 different Japanese maples at the farm now, and some of them have been in the ground for quite some time. Some
What's your favorite?
Gosh,
the fall color and shape and leaf type and...
I love that's hard to say. I mean, we gotta differentiate between dwarfs and standards or lacy leaf, but I love the Trompenberg maple. It kind of has a leaf like a fire glow or as most people know, like a blood good. But blood goods, that's a whole nother topic we could spend a lot of time on. But the Trompenberg has kind of a cup shaped leaf to it. You can just sort of eye that. A beautiful color, but I don't know. I think Kadzura, which has that golden and orange color in the fall, is stunning. But I also love Emperor the Emperor One maple that to me has a distinctive different red color than like the fire or the blood good, but they're all beautiful. And of course I love the coral bark maples.
Yes,
love those. Love those.
I do too. That may be my favorite.
I had a deer that it took a branch off one of mine last year rutting, and Mom and I are like, we've mended it back and it's looking really good. And Mom happened to see a buck out there the other day. Said it was the biggest buck she'd ever seen.
Katsura.
That's Katsura.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorites.
Oh, my.
That's mighty, mighty orange.
Isn't that
you
pretty?
Have a bunch of Japanese maples?
Yeah, I love the more yellow, the better I like them.
So the coral
yellow,
bark
yellow,
is really...
Yellow, late-sleeved. I would say I have about 15 on the place.
Okay.
But there
you have some pretty gorgeous ones.
Yeah,
large.
You do. But there are other than the coral bark, there are some others that have yellow fall color and have some reddish stems too, don't they?
Yeah, there's one called Benikawa. I've got that one in a container. It tends to be a little more dwarf, but it has the beautiful red stems and the golden yellow foliage. I'm trying to think of the one that's my mom's new favorite, and she wants me to get it out of a container, which I do need to. And plant it out on the grounds because it is going to get large. I can't think of the name of it right now. It's amazing what retirement can do to your mental health.
Well, I can tell you one that's not turning is the Vietnam evergreen maple.
Let's bring up some controversy now.
Lord, I'm going to dig one of those up and plant it at the farm and put it in some sun, see what she does.
I've got one you can have.
Yeah,
I
think you need to analyze that. I know there's been some controversy.
And I need to get it when it's dormant, because it'll...
Will it attack you?
I don't see any dormancy sign. It just stays the same.
Oh, well, because of the evergreen. Yeah, yeah.
It just stays the same.
Yeah.
Now what was the controversy?
So it was trying to be something that was ID'd. This goes back 3 or 4 years ago. So it was in a very infantile, juvenile stage, and I said that it looked like Chimonanthus, which is a, not Chionanthus, but Chimonanthus. And Pam Beck agreed with me.
Right.
And
your mother said it looked like bamboo.
But she came 3 years later. And the plant got bigger, and I can see that it is a maple, and I concede to Mark Worthington that he is correct.
Nelson conceded.
I did.
I did not know that.
It's good for the soul.
I thought we were going to have more
brawling
controversy here, but so you conceded. Well, that's big of you to do.
Hey, it's the first time I've ever been wrong. Not.
I'm wrong all the time. Just all day long.
Vietnam evergreen maple, if somebody wants to try to get one. And I don't know where
you
get them.
So what are the attributes beside it is evergreen?
Well, it looks to me like it's a bamboo shoot.
I mean, is it pretty?
I think if it got a little more sun, I think the bark is going to be interesting. I think you're going to have a little bit of striation on the bark, the trunk.
Striation?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
peeling? Start up a little bit.
Striation, is that a
little
term?
Kind of a little bit of a raised linear corkiness to it, or callus, if you will. And then the foliage, I think, is going to be pretty cool, too. I mean, it's a little bit fine, but it's thick.
I don't think it's in a good place to really tell what it's going to do because it's shady.
It's too shady. Yeah, so, that's why I say I want to get one in the sun.
Well, I know some people like that. So
shady.
Yeah.
More of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. It's 8:20. In case you didn't look at your clock this morning. Back on WPTF, Mike Crayley here, along with Rufus Edmonston and Nelsa Cox. And we've been having a good time talking about Japanese maples this morning. They tend to give us, especially during a good color year in the fall, they really can be spectacular.
It is just, they are grand. I mean, and Rufus, I know you're talking about that golden color. I compare it to like the ginkgos. They just have the best golden color.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of times when the ginkgo, when those leaves, if one falls, they all fall.
Yeah.
And the ground is just it's just beautiful with a gold mat around it. But I saw one yesterday, again, in kind of a protected area. But I was like, you know, I never noticed that maple was there. I've driven by here that ginkgo was there. I've driven by here 1,000 times. And it was very clearly a ginkgo with the scalloped leaves and the golden color. And I guess just since it was in a little bit of a protected area, for some reason it just hadn't dropped its leaves. So it's fun to see the leaf retention. And, you know, I know when I was driving into the farm, we've got a border of a collection of stuff that I've been collecting since the 80s. And one of them's a nice Japanese maple, and it's finally let go of about probably 70% of its foliage, and it's just beautiful to see that mat on the ground.
I know. I the many times that I've visited my sister and later on my daughter in Washington, D.C., in Georgetown, there's an Episcopal church, and there is a huge, and that's not the only one in Georgetown, with a huge ginkgo, and I can remember thinking to myself, walking by this, I bet George Washington walked by that tree at some point.
I tell you, Georgetown, I think it was fall of like early, mid-80s, and we did a class tour, I think with J.C. Ralston, and there was a walkway that kind of went into their downtown district, and it was just lined with, and I want to say it was a Princeton, or it was one of the upright ginkgos, but they were stunning.
It's just it's just a beautiful area, but those ginkgos are really something in the fall, and probably have just dropped their leaves maybe up there. But at any rate, there's some pretty ones around here. I don't know if there are any really old ones.
I bet you there are. I think even some of the cemeteries maybe have a couple.
Bet you Oakwood would.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I have a Henry Clay oak from that had to be taken down, but it's now about 30 feet tall, and it is a spectacle right now.
What kind of oak is it?
Henry Clay.
Well, I call it the Henry Clay oak.
Was it a scarlet oak or?
Scarlet. I would call it a scarlet oak. It's about 30 feet tall now, and I planted it when it was a sapling about 30 years ago. It's up in the woods, and then I got a ginkgo tree that has developed like a salamander for some reason. It doesn't go upright; it goes along the floor of the woods. And then I also have a poke from the over at Chapel Hill, if I may say that word here in this gathering. Let's see, is it Polk? Anyway,
the Croker or Coker Arboretum? Or?
It is.
William Polk in 1815, and according to local tradition, Henry Clay wrote his famous Raleigh letter of April 17th, 1844, in which he vigorously opposes the annexation of Texas by the United States, etc. The land and the Henry Clay Oak later became the property of Colonel Alexander B. Andrews. It was cut down in 91, but it was planted in 1792.
Wow, that's a great history story.
Yeah.
A plant history story.
It was a white oak.
Okay. Well, I've got one of those, the sapling it came from it.
That's a sturdy tree.
Yeah.
I should say. There was an historic marker erected in 1938 by the Daughters of the Revolution.
Yes.
Wow. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. Yeah. We're back on WPTF with the Weekend Gardener. A lot of fun talking about Japanese maples. We don't usually do that very often. They get a mention, but they're so spec. We've had a really good year for fall color this year.
So.
And I didn't think we were, but it's...
I think with the earlier rains that we had, throughout the summer, I mean, it was really a good growing season.
It was. Everything looked good.
Mm-hmm. I think
blooming,
so.
Blooming plants.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it just was very helpful for me to receive all that rain with not being there all the time. But I think that helped.
And colder weather. Yeah. Having those cold, even in August.
Yeah, it was pleasantly
mild. It was a nice August, actually.
Absolutely.
So
it's time for some cold weather.
I one of the weather people, it wasn't Gary, we didn't really talk about weather very much last week, but they say that December may be colder.
Okay.
A little more consistently colder. We've been teased a bit with some cold weather, and I mean, let's face it, this is a holiday season, and we feel more holiday-like.
When it's cold.
Yeah.
I've got a lemon tree that has about 35 lemons on it, and they are so big this year.
So they don't want any cold weather.
Well, they don't want too cold a weather, but I think if I can get another 2 weeks of not below freezing, I think they'll be ready to harvest.
What are you going to do with them then?
I don't know. It's a
Ann
plant.
Ann says she used to use them in cocktails occasionally. They admire lemons.
Well, 35 would be a lot of cocktails.
Well, I mean, you got to spread it out a little bit.
I could use one for medicinal purposes.
Just a lemon or the cocktail with the lemon?
I guess you, like my daddy calls it, a nice mixture.
Does Melissa make lemon jelly?
No, that's one thing she
never heard of that.
But I'll tell you, she
make some lemon meringue.
She really knows how to make a lemon meringue pie, and she did in early November with my son's birthday. That's what he requested.
Wow, that would be yummy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember Brenda Neal, Dr. Joe Neal's ex-wife, but anyway, she is doing missionary work over in Australia, and I was trying to find it real quick, but she, wherever they're staying, they have lemon trees, and they just harvested them, and there were hundreds of them, and they made some kind of lemon preserves or something. I'm like, woo, that'd be tart.
Yeah, you got to add a little dash of sugar.
You think?
Well, I'll ask Melissa about that.
They had a cyclone yesterday. She's posting. They made lemon marmalade is what they made with their lemons.
And I'll ask sweet Melissa about that. What are those dogs barking about?
Look at that, lemon marmalade. Isn't that good?
Well, I mean, that's pretty. I mean, I've had lemon.
I've had orange marmalade.
Orange, yeah. Oh, I mean,
so
that
lemon.
Sounds good.
What's the diff?
I like that.
Right. Citrus is citrus, so yeah.
All right. You got to have the right ratio of sugar and tart, sweet and sour. All right. Rob is in Durham. Hey, Rob.
Good morning. How are you,
Mr. Hales? How are you, sir?
I am fine. I just want to tell you about someone that listens to you.
All right.
And has been listening to you for years and years and years. And I think we should dub her the Tomato Queen of Cary.
Oh.
I'll just describe her like this. She is as elegant and beautiful a Southern Belle as you will ever meet.
Nice.
And her name is Carol.
Carol. Hey, morning, Carol.
And I think she's listening. She's probably really ticked at
Hey, she might be blushing. That's what Southern Belles do.
I'm sure she is. Anyway, I just wanted to encourage her to give you guys a call. She grows cherry tomatoes. I think in about 1,000.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Very
cool. I noticed some cherry tomatoes still out on a vine that we were growing this year. They just don't stop. Well, Carol, call us.
Yeah. I'll get out of the way. But have a lovely day.
I hope you do too, Rob.
Thank you, guys. I'll see you.
Yes, sir. Bye.
Is Rob working on the next book?
He says he's working on something with big insects.
Scariest book I ever read in my life. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. I read chapter 14 on, which is a very short chapter, just a few pages on, and he put it on TikTok and YouTube and stuff. So.
And what's the name of that book again?
Yeah, I got it right over here somewhere.
I think I saw somebody reading that out on one of our remotes.
Food Chain, Rob Hales.
Wow.
Yeah, take a look at it.
Okay.
That's my autographed copy.
All right.
The man has an imagination that just won't quit.
Woo.
Wow. I'll take a picture of
and
that.
And it's very southern.
Mentions all these towns.
Yeah, North Carolina.
Lenoir County and all kinds of Kinston.
The good towns. Just like Houston's out of Dublin that's now the peanuts in the bag are Hampton. But
The Houston peanuts, what the Kiwanis Club sells at the, or the Lions Club. Yeah. Is it Kiwanis or Lions at the state fair?
Kiwanis.
Kiwanis.
Oh, they're good. They're good peanuts.
Yeah.
All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up here on WPTF. It's 8:39. We're back on WPTF for the Weekend Gardener. Mike Raley here. Rufus is out taking a call from some senator or congressman.
Exactly.
And Miss Nelson's here. We got her in between the farm and the beach.
You did.
This is a pit stop in between.
That's right. That's
I right. guess. So we're thankful. And you're going to be with us next week.
Yeah.
A twofer.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to do my Thanksgiving with family down at Oak Island and take my mom over to Carolina Beach. She has a brother over there.
Oh.
He's on the Intercoastal Waterway. He has a nice spread. And so we're going to go see them Monday. We take the ferry over. And,
nice.
So that'll be fun. And then I've got some chores down there. And
there are always some chores at a beach house.
Well, and I'm going to get to play golf with my nephew and my cousin's husband and little things like that. And then we'll ride back down the road. But, I'm going to do the flotilla after at Ocean Isle.
Do you have a boat, too?
I do not.
Well, you got to buy a boat.
Well, so my attorney in Fuquay, Linda Johnson, she's got a big group coming down. They do oyster roast. So that'll be next Saturday. So, you know, this Saturday, today, I'm leaving here and going to Oak Island to get my mom, and we're going to the light show, Southern Lights, in Willard, North Carolina, right next to Wallace. So it's a nursery / garden center. It's a nursery I've been buying from for 35 years,
nice.
David Johnson. So we'll do that, and then next Saturday I'll come here, and then we'll go do the flotilla on the boat in Ocean Isle.
Willard and Wallace, they're brothers, I guess.
They must have been.
Could
have
been.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of oyster roasts, how was the Little Washington oyster roasts?
Fantastic.
Oh, that sounds
for
so
the
good.
Sounds, we got there, and there were loads and loads of people there. Great organization. Fundraiser to keep the sounds clear and unpolluted. My friend the rabbi, I call him, was there with his top hat on cooking, steaming the oysters.
With a top hat on. How about that?
Yeah, with a top hat. Really? And it was a fantastic organization. Worth the drive by all means. And I've been going now for several years. And
did you give the judge any of those Carolina Reapers that
absolutely.
The danger boy over.
Yes. I gave the judge The sack full plus
was he able? I mean, did he try one while he was driving?
No, he was warned.
We got a Danger Boy from one of our other stations here. Is a great gardener.
Oh, cool! You should
brother
have
Jimmy,
him
he hosted the show one time when I was overseas, but he's all over the place. But he's a great gardener, and he stopped by. He was working last Saturday morning and gave us some. Carolina Reapers.
And one hotter than that that has a number. It's so hot, it has a number. Doesn't have a name.
Have you heard from the judge since then?
I have not. I'm supposed to hear tomorrow.
He may be checked into the hospital.
We're going to go to the farmer's market restaurant and then go to some place called Cat. There's a cat place down in Garner where you go and they have cats running around.
Like a cat and wine bar or something like that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I didn't know cats
drank
wine.
I don't know what
wine.
That means. I'm more of a dog person.
I am as well.
Yeah, I remember your little sweet dog. He used to come over here and beg for a nab.
Yeah.
That's right.
She's a good girl.
Well,
by the way,
we'll pray for the judge, and I hope you hear from him.
I went on the rampage yesterday about cleaning up the dead perennials in the garden, cutting off the stalks of hibiscus and other things like that, and I don't follow any of these rules about don't cut your lantana down, it might get some ice in it and freeze over. I think those are old wives' tales.
Well, they're not hollow stemmed. They're woody stemmed, but, you know, I don't cut them down to the core, or if I do, then, and they're well established, and I do, then I throw either mulch or pine straw around the crown, and you're fine.
Well, Herb Evans used to say, don't plant things that are going to get ugly. Don't plant them where people can see them so well. Don't plant them right at the front door.
Or have, something else pop up in its presence.
Right.
Overplant,
whatever it's called.
Like and the eternal question about the different kinds of hydrangeas, how you prune them. If it's a hydrangea PG, 12 feet tall, I go down about a foot all the way around. If it's a regular...
This time of year,
yeah. On the other hydrangeas, I just cut below the old spent bulb a little bit, or bloom.
Yeah.
I don't go to the ground, because you may cut something off for next year. I don't know.
Yeah.
And...
Well, and a lot of the mop heads or the big blooms, if it's something that's been purchased in the last 15, maybe even 20, but at least the last 15 years, chances are it's going to bloom off of new or old growth. But I still practice the method you're talking about. I take it back to the next node or past the bloom stalk,
right.
Unless I'm going to spray paint the blooms for the winter interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at some point, they do get cut back to that. And I don't like to cut deeper, reason being hydrangeas will be the first to try to start budding and leafing out,
correct.
Even in February. And then we're going to get another cold, and it may kill those top blooms. So if you've already cut it back. So I kind of wait on that. And follow that method, yes.
Now, I'm going to cut my roses in February.
Perfect.
I go down about on the
second outward-facing bud on the hybrid tees?
Not the knockouts. I still got knockouts. I've never got the plague. And I go about a
third.
About a third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the reasons that roses should be pruned in February is because that's typically where we've had the coolest, coldest, consistent time, and roses tend to be heavy bleeders and they attract insects. So you want to cut them when it is really cold so that they don't bleed and attract insects to that fresh cut. That's one of the main reasons.
So you learn something all the time.
Every show.
Yeah, and same thing with like grapevines.
Absolutely.
Heavy bleeders.
People are always worried about that.
Yeah, and I mean, they are a heavy bleeder.
They will bleed. Oh,
it doesn't matter what time of year it is. But I mean, ideally cut it during the coldest time because we just don't have a lot of insects out, and they're certainly going to go for that sugar. And if you've ever cut a grape, you will see how it'll just goo up and goo up and goo up and bleed and bleed and bleed. But that is the best time just to cut down on pests and potential pathogens that could get in. And so, yep.
And I've got to tell people, use your leaves. Don't.
Yeah, people.
Don't push them to the side. Now, I did read somewhere, I think, that Raleigh's going to no longer take up leaves.
Right. Next year.
By the suction. Next year. You got to put them in bags. Well, that's just another thing to the environment of all these bags. And what is wrong with leaves?
Or the paper bags. With our plants, we don't leave a ton of them in the actual planting beds because of the canopy. It just makes it drier. And I know there's different schools of thought on this, but we rake them into our paths, which can also be somewhat of a, I don't want to say a roadway, but the golf cart. I can fit my truck through some of the gardens. And so we run over them. So we're kind of mulching them down.
Yeah. And you could do that in the lawn, too, if there are not a lot of leaves.
And then we rake them back up so they're going to decompose quicker. But if we leave all those big oaks matted down, and again, I see it time and time again where people have, like, old azaleas. If you don't get those leaves out from in the azalea plant itself and around the base, even when it does rain, I mean, those leaves will repel water. So if you can mulch them or break them down, great. But, so that's kind of how we practice.
Yeah. All I'm saying is the greatest mulch in the world are your leaves.
Well, it's a good start for a compost pile, too, if you're thinking about that. I mean, you can't make 50-pound bags of compost very easily.
Man, I remember every Sunday I would go out to on Trinity Road down there across from I guess it was Carter Finley, and they would have piles and piles and piles, and I'd load my truck up or put them in bags, and we'd take that compost, which was, you know, as soon as you stuck a pitchfork into the ground or into this pile, steam would just roll off of it, just black, dark, good, rich soil that was already composted, and that's how I would work it into my plantings.
Reminder that the Raleigh Christmas Parade is going on this morning, and it will start at 9:30, but they're going to be blocking parts of Salisbury and Morgan Street and Fayetteville Street and Hillsborough and all of that down there, I guess.
I just did get through this morning at 10 till 7.
I assume it starts at
I think 9:30.
Up there near St. Mary's on Hillsborough.
Our dear friend Wesley, Miss Wesley Williams.
Yeah,
of course you know Wesley was the director of the Chitlin Club CIA.
Yeah, also Greater Raleigh Merchants Bureau.
Right.
But he would call me because I've done Saturday mornings forever. I talked to him many times. He would call us to remind us, and he took. Wesley took everything seriously.
Yeah. Yes.
This was a serious thing for him. So, and of course, it is logistically and everything to organize something like that and to keep all the merchants happy. But he was a treasure. There's no doubt about that. And helped start the Chitlin Club, didn't he?
He certainly did.
Yeah.
And of course, we've lost our wonderful friend
JC. Yeah,
already missed JC so much.
Yeah, that's hard to get.
We'll have to say that was always something I look forward to when you invite me is having him call in
with a joke.
Hear his jokes.
And we and Joel did a magnificent job of finding a couple, 2 or 3 weeks ago after JC passed away. We had his last call and his last joke. We had his last joke on the air.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
That's a great way to remember JC because he was always telling history stories or
very distinctive voice that I can always hear in my head.
Yeah.
Well, what's our man Scott that does the North Scott? What's the show?
Scott Mason.
Scott Mason show. He did a rerun of Wesley getting married on a game show.
What?
Wesley Williams got married on a game show years and years and years ago.
A national game show?
Yes.
Well, my goodness.
Yes. And he had the tape of it, and he was a young man, and it was phenomenal.
I bet he took that seriously, too.
Oh, yeah. Got married on a national, some kind of a get married show.
Uh-huh.
Huh, national TV.
Newlyweds? That was a different show.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that was, but how about that? I salute Scott for figuring that out, coming up with that kind of material.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he did something on JC, too, at some point.
Well, that's
He did on the Chitling Club.
Oh, JC was on there 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
On Scott Mason's Tar Heel Traveler.
Tar Heel Traveler, yeah.
Yeah. There was a special the other night about family and love. Very tender, half an hour of Scott Mason.
Nice.
One of our favorite people.
About love, yeah. Yeah, nice guy. Sir, very, very, very talented. All right, 919-860-9783. Gosh, we've already been through an hour here, pretty much.
Huh.
And Brother Joel is going to take us out. We'll be back after the news here on WPTF. It's 8:57.